AM 950, Matt McNeil. Thanks for being with us today. Avi Viswanathan is going to be joining us today. He is at the Minnesota Historical Society. He is the new director of the Department of Inclusion and Community Engagement at the Minnesota Historical Society. And he's kind enough to join us today about a recognition, an event, a remembrance of what happened in Duluth 100 years ago, a horrible lynching that took place, and then also talking about that in perspective of what's going on right now in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Avi, thank you very much. I do appreciate the time.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me on, Matt.
Let's talk a little bit in regards to what happened in Duluth. Because what happened in Duluth was something that was happening across the country. This, you know, and I don't, it would happening in the South with the KKK, and but it was gradually moving across the country, and it was becoming more common to see lynchings, especially lynchings and you know, mob justice towards minorities that had been falsely accused of crimes. So when this happened in Duluth, it wasn't as if this was the only case of this happening in the country. There had been, you know, white power, you know, demonstrations against minorities across the country, correct?
Absolutely. This event happened in a much larger context of violence against Black people that exists in this country for a very long time. We're talking, you know, in terms of slavery and then post-slavery, this type of sort of mob justice. I don't know what justice isn't the right word, but this idea of people taking into their own hands and killing Black people who were falsely accused of crimes was something that happened a great deal, as you were just saying.
So this was, it was 1920, June 15th, it was Elias Clayton, Elmer Jackson, and Isaac McGee were three free African-American men in Duluth. Were they regular residents up there living in the community?
They were actually in town for a circus, a literal circus, and were employed. A number of Black people were employed by the circus as cooks and other types of labor jobs. And so they were in town for this event, and some people who had attended the event were not exactly sure what happened with their interactions. But somebody accused six men who were part of the circus of raping a white woman, falsely accused them of raping a white woman.
Was the story? Do you know how much of the story was made up? I mean, obviously this is, it sounds very similar to the stories you hear of tragedy across the country at that point, where just the violation of a white woman, whether it happened or not, was the justification to enrage the white, predominantly the white male population, into wanting, you know, blood, for lack of a better way to say it.
Yeah, so first I just want to mention the book, The Lynchings in Duluth by Michael Fido, which is a really in-depth history of what happened and really helped dig deeper into a story that had been somewhat forgotten or pushed aside by the history of this state. And that book goes into a good amount of detail, but at least from the accusation against the six Black men, there a medical examination actually found no evidence or physical signs of rape or assault on the woman.
This happens. The white population, you know, it made the decision to lynch these men. Where were they hung?
Right in downtown Duluth, at the intersection of Second Avenue and First Street. Where there is now actually a memorial commemorating the event and the three men, Elias Clayton, Elmer Jackson, and Isaac McGee. I should also add that I mentioned that there were six men who were arrested. These three men were lynched and murdered in the street, and the Minnesota National Guard actually got called in to protect the other three men so that they were not lynched. So it was a continuing thing that could have escalated even further.
This is a morbid picture and clearly a horrible piece of Minnesota history. Was it a case where the police were trying to stop them? Were they encouraging them? And in how long were their bodies hanging there at the intersection?
The police basically stood aside, got out of the way and let this event happen. You know, I'm not 100% sure on sort of how long the bodies were there and how long the sort of spectacle lasted in terms of that. But there were a lot of people who were there, who were present, who were watching. You know, some who tried to step in and stop it from happening, but it was a lot of people were there to witness this event, and some who let it happen and a lot who encouraged it.
Is there a time when, and I don't know if you know the specifics of this, but was there a time where it became realistic or known to the public that, no, these men had not committed the crime? Was that any time at that point, or was that, it did it take decades for people to realize, oh, no, three men were killed wrongly in Duluth?
I do not know sort of how long it took, but there were people who did, who were accused of the crime, who did end up going to trial. And so it did take some time, at least until through part of the following year, before all of that part of the process played out.
When you were mentioning the lynchings in Duluth, the book for Michael Fido, the one of the things you mentioned is that this was sort of forgotten part of history. When did people, you know, start coming to grips? I mean, in the sense that you say there's a memorial there now at the intersection. At what point do you feel that the city started to come to grips with this horrible incident that happened in their city under the watch of the people that were there?
So the history really started to come back about 50 years ago. That's when things started to, I think the story really started to be told again. And that developed over time. I think it was probably, you know, another 20 to 30 years before it really, sort of like there's a memorial in Duluth, for instance, that was formed in June of 2000, so 20 years ago now, 80 years after the lynching. There was some movement in the 90s around the gravestones, where the marking of gravestones in the church in Duluth, or in a, excuse me, a cemetery in Duluth. And Michael Fido's book was actually published a second time, re-released in the 90s, and that's probably where things really started to pick up more.
I'm going to ask you this under your title here, the director of the Department of Inclusion and Community Engagement. You're clearly very intelligent in regards to societal issues, and I think that there is an element you just said that I just love to get your perspective on. I'm not so much on specifics, but just on your thoughts. As you said, it was 50 years after the original lynching. That is the time frame that you hear a lot, that there almost seems to be a reluctance while the people who committed the crime of murder are still around, or the kids that were there at the time are still around, for the community to finally say, are they all dead? Oh, now let's talk about how bad they were. There almost seems to be a reluctance in society that, even though fairly quickly afterwards, this must have been known something was wrong here, that this should never have happened. The fact the National Guard was called out to stop it from happening any further. But there always, when we have cases like this, there seems to be this almost undying attempt by the community to say, well, the people that committed the lynching, let's make sure we don't hurt their feelings. Let's make sure that they can die off, and then we'll start acknowledging it. I know it's not so concise or so, you know, announced like that, but your thoughts on that, because that does seem, that timeline, when you say it's like 30 years, 40 years, 50 years afterwards, you rarely hear within 4 or 5 years saying, oh my God, that was horrible. How did this ever happen? Especially when we're talking about these crimes, it almost feels as if the people who are the guilty parties, they want to make sure they're long gone before anyone points out their bad behavior.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, not having been one of those people or that community, I imagine that people are not willing to acknowledge or admit the tragic mistakes and the acts of violence and racism that their communities have perpetrated on people. But it comes a time for them to recognize their own actions. And the telling of a history in explicit details can really jumpstart that. I do agree in what you're saying, that it takes that time for people to be gone or move on from the community before people can recognize it. I mean, that being said, I think it's important also to say that a lot of the historic narratives that we see in different parts of the country really do reflect old narratives still to this day. I'm hopeful that things are changing right now, that we're seeing a lot swifter condemnation of on the murder of George Floyd, for instance, than I think that we probably ever see in our country. And so maybe things are moving quicker in this. But there was an article in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution about a week ago about how the South, and particularly Georgia, still has a Southern narrative around the Civil War. So it takes a lot of time, hundreds of years perhaps in that instance, of people to start shifting the narrative. But I do see a different reaction right now than we've seen in the past.
Oh, as a guy that lived in Georgia for a little bit, we can blow up Stone Mountain at any point. I'd be perfectly okay with that. As a, I don't like insurgencies against my country. That's just me, though. I'm just wacky crazy. You brought up what happened here with George Floyd, and once again, it's the historical perspective, I think, is an important one, because as many African Americans will state, and truthfully, factually, this is just the continuation of the process that Duluth, the slavery, the slave trade, you know, Jim Crow laws, the civil rights movement. I mean, this is just the latest example of it. But, you know, it is interesting, but I think it being so brazen and the way that it is so visual and that everyone saw that tape so quickly, I agree with you. It's interesting to see that there seems to be a different dynamic in the response to this case as opposed to cases in the past.
And that's absolutely true. And I want us to think about, and one of the reasons we're holding this week of remembrance and those different activities, and not just the Historical Society, but other partners and organizations, is so that people understand that the murder of George Floyd is not an isolated instance. So we can see a swift condemnation. We can see people calling it for what it is and seeing the video. And that's important. But we also don't want it to seem like this is not happening in a larger, broader context of the history that Black people have faced in our country, that the events 100 years ago are connected to what's happening right now. And this is systemic. It's a systemic problem. And we hope that people think about the history, make those connections, and then have the resolve to act and make change.
By the way, if I can make a point, and this kind of ties it together, when you talk about forgotten history and the fact that now we're coming to grips with what happened in Duluth and we are watching history unfold with George Floyd, it's interesting that during this time, there's another element. There's the Plymouth Avenue in North Minneapolis, 1967. You know, I knew a little bit about that. I mean, there was a lot of problems like that going nationwide. I think it kind of got ignored a little bit. But when I brought that up, I mean, I think it is so important that we keep reminding people of the history, because there is history from not that long ago about racial unrest in this city that people have already completely and totally forgotten about. And I think that if you only look at it through through glasses that only see occasional historical points, you miss the larger picture.
That's absolutely true. And speaking of Plymouth Avenue, I just wanted to point out, too, that at the corner of Penn and Plymouth in North Minneapolis is the Minnesota African American Heritage Museum and Gallery. And they have, being physically present in spaces right now and during this pandemic is hard, but they are a tremendous resource to learning about the history of our Black community in the region, in the state, and in the cities. Tina Burnside is the co-director and a historian there who's been part of conversations right now. And I would encourage people to go visit the gallery whenever they can and to look into the resources there, because some of those things that we've been missing that aren't talked about really need to be told from the community, because they're the people who continue to live that history and to share those stories.
And I know for you, as well as the rest of the Minnesota Historical Society, there's a lesson that you're learning from Duluth in the sense as you look at George Floyd, and that is to not drop the ball, to not miss the history. This is one of the things I love about the Minnesota Historical Society is you guys really have done a great job of grabbing history in the moment. I mean, whether that's over at the museum, the First Avenue exhibit. I remember when the 35W bridge collapsed that they had very quickly one of the bus doors there on display at the museum, that you try to grab history and make sure that it doesn't get forgotten or whitewashed for 50 years before people start realizing, oh, this was a major event.
That's absolutely true. We have a number of opportunities that we've had over the course of time, as you just mentioned, to capture history in the moment. And actually, we were in the process of collecting stories around COVID and people's experiences with the pandemic. We still are doing that, but it's right now we definitely have a focus on making sure that we're able to document what happens now and share it so that, you know, 50 years from now, we're not having to wait for a book to be published, that history is happening right now.
The 100-year anniversary of the Duluth lynchings, a remembrance, is going on the week, June of 8th through the 15th. A lot of different events going on. The Minnesota Historical Society website has all the information about that. Avi Viswanathan is once again the director of department in director of the Department of Inclusion and Community Engagement at the Minnesota Historical Society. Avi, I really appreciate the time. Thank you very much. All my best on this. And I look forward to definitely look forward to talking to you more over the next few years. Hopefully. Okay.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time. And I also look forward to speaking with you again.
Thanks, Avi. We'll take a break. Come on back. Matt McNeil right here on AM 950.